The Ganghwa Bridge is a low, gray arc over a river the color of milky tea, and the bus hums across it at an angle that makes the West Sea look like it's been pinned to the horizon. 20 minutes ago, I was in Incheon, watching the city stack itself into glass towers behind me. Now the towers are gone, replaced by flat green fields and the occasional red and white water tower, and the air through the open window has a different weight to it. Salt, mud, and something green. This is Ganghwagun, and it's where the plan changes. The plan was always to come here, get out of the gateway city, find the coast, start moving south with the summer. But I didn't expect the island to feel this separate. The bus drops me at Ganghwa Bus Terminal, which is a clean, small, and entirely functional concrete box. A sign outside lists the local routes in Korean, and I stand there for a minute, sweating through my shirt, trying to work out which bus goes to Dongmak Beach. The heat is the same as Incheon, 34 degrees, feels like 41, the kind of heat that wraps around you like a wet sheet. But there's a breeze here that the city never had. A woman at the ticket counter points me to bus 30 and tells me, in the brisk way locals do, that it'll be about 20 minutes. She also tells me the mudflats are best at low tide, which is at 4:40 this afternoon. I check my watch. It's 1:15. I have time to drop my bag at the pension first. I'm staying at Ganghwa Sweet House Pension, a low white building near the coast with a small yard of potted plants and a view over the mudflats from the second floor balcony. The owner, a cheerful woman in her 60s, checks me in and hands me a card key and a bottle of cold water, apologizing that the air conditioner is still warming up. The room is simple, a bed, a TV, a small fridge, and costs 70,000 won a night, about $50, which feels fair for the view. I dump my bag, drink the water, and stand on the balcony for a minute, watching the tide go out. The mudflats are a vast, shimmering plain of dark brown, and far out, tiny figures in rubber boots are bent over, digging for clams. That's the first thing I do. I just watch them for a while. Dongmak Beach, when you actually get down onto it, is not a beach in the usual sense. There's no sand, no waves crashing. The West Sea here is tidal, and the mudflats go out for what feels like a kilometer at low tide, so the water is a distant line of silver beyond the brown. The air smells rich, mineral, alive. A family is out with plastic buckets and small rakes, and a man teaches his daughter how to find the clam holes, tiny dimples in the mud where the clams are breathing. I join in for a bit, not very successfully, but the mud is cool and squishy between my toes, and the breeze on my face is genuinely cooling. It's the first time since I landed in Korea that the heat has felt bearable. I pay 5,000 won, about $4, to a woman who rents out the buckets and rakes, and she hands me a pair of rubber flip-flops that are two sizes too big. By the time I walk back up the beach, my feet are covered in gray-brown mud and I'm grinning like a kid. Later, with the tide starting to creep back in, I decide to check out the dolmens. They're in Haejeomyeon, a short bus ride from the terminal, and the site is exactly what you'd imagine a UNESCO World Heritage thing to be. A grassy park with big stones arranged in odd, deliberate patterns. The Bujinri Dolmen Cluster has about 16 of them, and the famous one, the Jisiakmyo Capstone, weighs around 75 tons. I stand under it for a long time, trying to get my head around the fact that someone moved this rock 4,000 years ago, without cranes, without wheels, probably with logs and ropes and brute coordinated human force. The sign says it was a burial marker, but it's more than that. It's a statement, a declaration that people lived here, mattered here, and wanted to be remembered. The stones are warm to the touch, and the grass around them is cropped short. The Ganghwa History Museum is right next to the site, and the entry fee covers both 3,000 won, about $2. I spend half an hour inside, looking at Bronze Age pottery and a diorama of the dolmen construction, before the afternoon heat chases me back out. The other big thing on the island, the thing that draws most tourists, is Jeondongsa Temple. It's in Gilsangmyeon, up in the hills, and the bus ride there is a slow climb through pine forest and small farms. The temple is Korea's oldest active one, believed to have been founded in 381 CE, and it sits inside a fortress wall called Samnangseong, which looks like something out of a historical drama. The entrance path is lined with towering ginkgo trees, some of them over 600 years old. Their leaves a fresh green that somehow makes the air feel cooler. I'm not a religious person, but there is something in the way a temple stays that settles you. the smell of old wood and incense, the sound of the wind in the trees, the low, long note of a wooden gong being struck. The temple stay program is exactly what I need tonight. The temple stay costs about 50,000 won, around $35, and includes a simple dinner and breakfast, plus a spot on a sleeping mat in one of the dormitory rooms. There are four of us tonight, me, a young couple from Seoul, and a middle-aged monk in training from Busan who's here for a week of silence. We eat dinner in a low hall, sitting on floor cushions, eating vegetable bibimbap with about 8 small bowls of banchan, pickled radish, seasoned spinach, kimchi, soy sauce potatoes, and the monk in training, whose name is Jae-hyun, shows me how to eat the salted shrimp with rice. Ganghwa is known for its sujiat, the salted shrimp that ferments in the tidal flats, and he tells me it's the island's secret weapon, the thing that makes kimchi taste different here. I nod, and I don't tell him that everything tastes different here, the air, the water, the time itself. After dinner, Jae-hyun takes us on a short walk around the temple grounds. The sun is low, and the light is thin and golden. We pass the iron bell, which is a designated treasure, cast centuries ago with a dragon molded around the crown. He lets me strike it once, a deep, resonant boom that goes right through your sternum, and then we sit on the wooden veranda of the main hall, looking out over the fortress wall and the darkening valley. He talks about the temple's history, how it survived the Mongol invasions by hiding in the mountains, how it served as a refuge during the Korean War. This island has always been a border, he says, in English that is careful and precise, a place where people came to escape or to defend or to pray. I think about the dolmens and the fortress walls and the mudflats, and I feel like I understand what he means. The night is quiet in a way I haven't experienced since I landed. The city hum has been replaced by the tick of insects and the occasional rustle of the ginkgo leaves. The sleep mat is firmer than I'm used to, but I drift off quickly, and when I wake at 4:30 for the dawn chant, I feel rested in a way I haven't felt in a week. The chant is low and rhythmic, and the scent of incense is thick in the morning air. After it's over, I eat breakfast. Rice, soup, more banchan, more shrimp, and then I pack my bag, thank Jae-hyun, and walk back down the mountain with the sun already beginning to hammer the day flat. I have one more thing to see on Ganghwa before I catch the bus south. The Peace Observatory. It's in Yongsamayan, the northernmost township, and it's past a military checkpoint where a soldier in fatigues checks my passport and the registration card I got an Incheon. I'm told this is standard for the civilian control line, and I nod, trying to act like I do this every day. The observatory itself is a low concrete structure with a flat rooftop, and from the viewing platforms you can see across the Han River estuary to North Korea. There are binoculars mounted on the railings, and I put a 500 won coin in the slot, about 30 cents, and adjust the focus. I see a North Korean village, gray and still, a flagpole flying a large red flag, and the green of the fields beyond. It looks like a painting or a postcard from another era. A sign next to the binocular says I'm looking at the northern limit line, the de facto maritime border, and that the distance to the North Korean shore is about 2.3 kilometers. I stand there for a long time, feeling the weight of the geography. On the way back down, I stop at the Joyong Textile Building in Gangwa-yup. It's a 1933 rayon factory that's been converted into a cafe and cultural space, and it's the epitome of what they call neutro-retro revival. The red brick walls and high windows have been preserved, and the interior is all exposed steel beams and hanging light bulbs. I order an iced Americano at the counter, about 4,500 won, $3, and sit at a high table near the window, looking out at the old smokestack. The place is full of young people, laughing and tapping on laptops, and the contrast with the border crossing I just did is jarring. But I guess that's Ganghwa, it's a border, and it's also a weekend getaway, and it can hold both things at once. The bus back to the terminal is late, and by the time I get there, the sun is already starting to drop towards the West Sea. I have a couple of hours before I need to head to the next leg of the trip, so I walk down to the Ganghwa Peace Observatory again. Not the observatory itself, but the waterfront near the Gwangsingbo Fortress, which I'd spotted on the map. The fortress is a run of gray stone walls along the Ganghwa Strait, built to defend the island against invasions, and I walk along the top, looking out at the sea. A sign tells me this was the site of the 1871 battle against the U.S. expedition, when a small Korean garrison held off a much larger American force for a day before being overwhelmed. I try to imagine the chaos of that day, the noise and smoke, but the only sound now is the wind and the gulls. I decide to skip dinner in a restaurant and just buy some ginseng tea and a bag of rice crackers from a convenience store by the terminal, about 6,000 won total for dollars, and eat them sitting on the low seawall with my legs dangling over the water. The sky is a wash of peach and gold, and the water is a mirror of the same colors. I've been here less than 24 hours, and Ganghwa has already given me more than I expected. The mudflats, the old stones, the temple, the border. This is what the long trip is supposed to be, I think. Not just checking off sites, but finding the weight of a place. As the sun slides below the water, I feel the first hint of the cool evening air, and I realize I'm not ready to leave yet. But the plan is the plan. The bus south is tomorrow morning. I take a final deep breath, the smell of mud and salt and ginseng tea, and I head back to the pension to pack. Good night, Ganghwa. I'll be back before the journey ends. For now, I have a date with the West Seacoast and its calling.